You are listening to the Slow Living Podcast, and I'm your host, Stephanie O'Day. What if I told you that you could truly have the life of your dreams, the life you've always wanted, one filled with abundance, joy, and a sense of purpose? It's absolutely possible, and I see it each and every day with my coaching clients. It all starts with learning how to slow down. You deserve to live the life you've always dreamt about. Let's get started. Hi there, Slow Down Society. Steph here, and welcome to episode 128 of the Slow Living Podcast. I am thrilled to have Liz in the house today. And Liz, I literally just met this past week. So sometimes people write to me and they're like, so are you really friends with the people that you interview? So sometimes, and sometimes not. And sometimes their publicist reaches out to me. But in this particular situation, I am bubbling up and overjoyed with glee that I get to interview Liz because we have a lot in common. And I did not know about her site, The Frugal Woods and Meet the Frugal Woods, her book, until this past week. And it was because a reader of mine, we were embarking on a 30-day challenge of no buy. And she's like, oh, I always do the Frugal Woods no buy challenge every year. I'm like, I do not know that. Let me do some Googling. And then I fell down a rabbit hole. And then I emailed Liz, total fangirl. I'm like, you should be on my podcast. And she said, okay. So Liz, thank you for being here. So the name of your book is Meet the Frugal Woods. And here, I will read the blurb on the back of the book. And it's a memoir. And it says, this is the deeply personal story of why award-winning personal finance blogger Elizabeth Willard Thames abandoned a successful career in the city and embraced extreme frugality to create a more meaningful, purpose-driven life and retire to a homestead in the woods at age 32. Holy cow. Okay. Thank you, Liz. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So you can't see us, guys, because we're recording in Zoom, but we only save the audio. Liz is in bed with a fractured tibia from skiing. Does that sound right?
That is correct. Tibia, as we have learned, part of the knee.
Okay.
And I can't, yeah.
So we're quote unquote extreme frugality, yet obviously you have healthcare and you get to go skiing. So so how do we marry the two?
Right. So what I practice is really values-based spending. So I am all about prioritizing what matters most to you, spending in service of that, and letting go of everything else.
Yeah. I think we're samesies there. I think we're samesies there because I was reading your book at the hairdresser while I was getting new highlights because I'm doing some filming next month and I'm old now, so I have to hide the gray. And so I'm thinking, so I agree with so much of this, yet I am A-okay right now dropping $200 to get really good highlights.
Oh yeah. I have a person who cuts my hair. Absolutely. I know it's not quite $200 because so the grays are coming in like one at a time, which I'm okay with, but I'm like, we might need to consolidate, guys. Cause there's like one gray every like five hairs. I'm like, let's, you know, all or nothing here. But no, I really don't believe in deprivation. My whole philosophy is finding a sustainable, peaceful way of living and of spending.
Yeah. Agreed. Absolutely. So we have such similar overlaps when I was reading your book and I fell in love with personal development and all things finance books in my early 20s. And I too worked in a nonprofit. I was in social work for the county. I was running homeless shelter preschools at the time. But I knew there was money out there, specifically because I was asking these rich people for money and they're like, okay, here you go. And what's fascinating, and I actually flagged it in your book, is you were with your boss and you asked her, I think it was in an elevator, how do you measure success in your life? And you assumed at the time she would talk about career success. And instead, she started talking about life success and your job
It's just where you go to make money. I sort of liken it to adult daycare. This is just what people do to go make money. That's not who they are and what their identity is. I'm so glad that I actually bought your book and didn't check it out from the library, because I highlighted and underlined all these things. So will you kind of stretch that out a little bit?
Absolutely. So my husband and I married pretty young at 24. We're now 40. So 24 feels like unfathomably young. I can't believe someone didn't step in and say, like, babies, you cannot get married. But we did. And it, you know, it worked out. We've grown and changed together. And initially, you know, at age 24, if I put myself back there, I really saw career success as what we would strive for and what we would strive for jointly. I figured we would probably have kids someday, but it was not on the radar at that point in time. And so everything that we did was really focused on career advancement and earnings advancement. And we both have this sort of naturally frugal personality. We also had essentially no money when we got married. We had no debt, which is a great deal of privilege and was a very privileged position to start from. But we had, like, I don't know, I think I tallied it up in the book, maybe $5,000, $2,000 between the two of us. Mm-hmm. And our rent was $1,400 a month, which I just can remember every month we're like, we're going to make it. I know we're going to be able to pay rent. And this was for a basement apartment in outside of Boston. So the trajectory of our 20s was so focused on career. And then we hit 28. And we were able to buy our first home because we've been saving money all this time. And at that point, we both had jobs that we really thought would be our dream jobs. We were both managers at mission-based organizations, doing things that we believed in, working with people that we respected. And we kind of looked at each other and said, like, is this all there is? Mm. We're about to turn 30. We don't have children yet. We do have a dog, which was our first child, which I thought was a facsimile for a child until I had an actual child. And I was like, well, that's ridiculous. And we had this real awakening, a quarter life crisis of, I can't do this. I cannot work all day under fluorescent lights in a cubicle for someone else, even though it's for a mission I deeply believe in. And then sort of come home at night, have just a couple hours to kind of scramble in the evening, and then spend every weekend driving to hike. So we love to hike, and we would drive as far as we could to hit a mountain and be able to summit and get down before dark. And that was wonderful, but it was really raising the question of, why are we living in the middle of a city when all we want to do is escape to the countryside and hike a mountain? Yeah. So this was a painful realization. You know, I don't think that I think they're called like a quarter life or a midlife crisis for a reason. It's not like it was this crystal divine, I realized what I want to do. It was much more painful and really got us questioning, well, what have we been working for? What are we doing here? You know, this is the experience we have career-wise. We can't be farmers. And it was at that point that we came across this idea of financial independence and retiring early, which is a pretty prolific community on the internet. So anybody who's curious, Google that, lots of resources. Fire. And the whole idea there is that you save as much as you possibly can while you're in your accumulation phase, while you're earning, you spend as little as possible and you invest everything. And then ultimately you're able to either retire completely, not work at all, or really step down your work into something that is part-time, something that is meaningful to you, or something that really just takes less brain energy. So I have a friend who is retired early and she just works in a coffee shop while her kids are at school. She just enjoys it. It's something that she can do that brings in a little bit of money, but that creates essentially no overhead or stress for her and does not impinge on her family schedule. So that's really the idea behind FIRE, and it's an idea of reaching contentment and reaching a state of enough. So at 29, that is what we decided to work towards.
If you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you know that I've recorded quite a bit on FIRE. So episode 15, I introduced it. Episode 66, I revisited it. I throw a B in to make it fiber, because first of all, having a little bit of extra fiber in your life is always a good thing. But I do the financial independence before retiring early, and online and different podcasts, it's FI. So hitting that FI number where, you know, if you keep doing what you're doing, your investments will carry you. It will be okay. And I explain the down and the dirty mathing in that episode 66. So that would be the one to listen to. What's interesting is the idea of homesteading and going to kind of quote unquote, like live off the grid. So I know you don't watch TV probably as much as I do because I am addicted to TV, but that Save Our Homestead TV show or whatever it is, where the guy comes in and he needs to button his shirt up because you can see his chest hair, and that kind of grosses me out. But he comes in to save them because they really didn't think it through. How did you get at only 28, 29, the idea like, oh, okay, this will work and we're not going to like give ourselves sepsis by drinking bad well water?
Research. Okay. The internet is your buddy. So we really embarked on this as just a massive research project. And to be clear, we don't live off the grid and okay. We do not live on a self-sustaining homestead. I know people who attempt that and it is grueling. It is grueling work and it is nigh on impossible, particularly in Vermont where we are, because it's very
wait, what was that word? Nigh on?
Nigh on impossible, nearly impossible.
Is that N-I-G-H? Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Sorry.
No, I just wanted to know. I wanted to make sure I was keeping up. Okay, cool beans. Okay.
It's nearly impossible. And so that was not ever our hope. We, to be very clear, bought a house that is a finished home. I know quite a few people who move to Vermont and live in a tent or live in a yurt or live in a camper. That's very common.
Really?
Yes, because it's very inexpensive. And in order to homestead in that way. So again, we're coming from this place of deep privilege where we were able to buy a family home. It's just a regular house. And we have a barn and we have 66 acres of land. But we do not do subsistence farming. We do like hobby farming. So yeah. We'll make maple syrup or we'll plant a garden. And we have some chickens and they occasionally deign to lay an egg. More often, they're just freeloaders. Yeah. They're just out there eating their food, not laying anything. And so it certainly is possible to live that way. And there are plenty of people who talk about how to do that. It is a full-on lifestyle. You will not make any money. You will lose money. And it's just very, very, very hard work. So that was, you know, our plan was really more to situate ourselves in a rural landscape, be able to hike every day, be able to raise our kids in nature, be outside all the time, have the time and the space and the resources to really pursue what we want to, and to be able to open the door and tell the kids, go out, go play, don't go past the woods line, but like go explore, find frogs and dig in the mud, and to really have no concerns about doing that. And it's just a very deeply held value that my husband and I both have.
Yeah. I like that. I like the idea of figuring out how to do the things you need to do, so then you can do the things you really want to do. And absolutely spending time with your kids when they're little. So you have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, is that right?
Oh, she's 8, actually.
The 5-year-old's the baby, the quote unquote baby. Okay.
The baby. She definitely feels that she's the baby.
Okay. So my older two were 3 years apart. And then we did go for number 3. But what's interesting is going for number 3, it was a financial decision. I felt as if our family wasn't complete. And thankfully, the online writing and the books were doing well enough that we decided on purpose, okay, now's the time to do it. So there's a 5-year gap between the second two. And I love all things baby girls. I just do. And what's fun for me now that my children are older is they have adopted some of my husband and I, our frugality, But again, like frugality in quotes, I live in Silicon Valley. So compared to the Joneses down the street, we're pretty frugal, but also I'm a huge fan of stealth wealth. We're not flashy flaunty. We're great with camping, like just deciding. And so Dave Ramsey has a lot of baggage surrounding him, but he has a quote that Adam and I have always stuck with, is if you live the way no one is now, then later you can live the way no one is. And that's sort of how we were A-okay with being really quite frugal in our younger years, because of the value of compound interesting. And so now that we're older than you, we're 47. Now we can loosen up and be like, whatever, it's fine. The 529s are funded. It's fine. Retirement is it's just fine. And that feels fun. And it's lovely and wonderful. And I will tell you, when my kids were 8 and 5 and younger, it was a lot easier to be super frugal than now, because we did embark upon club sports. We did do things because we decided this is important for the kids, and we're okay with that. If that means we're working a year or two longer to shove more coal on the fire, whatever, it's fine. So what are your thoughts on that? So do you homeschool your kids now, or are they in school?
Oh, no.
Okay.
So yeah, I think there is this misconception with like Frugal Woods Homestead that I'm like, you know, homeschooling and like stirring sourdough all day and like wearing aprons around and have long hair. I have very short hair. I'm very progressive. I do not cook. My husband does the cooking. My kids go to public school. So I do sometimes sort of like abuse those notions. I have done canning. Let me tell you, I have canned some jams in my day. Will I do it again? Unlikely.
Yeah.
It is hot, challenging, takes forever. I like to do it when my kids are into it. So like I have one kid who's super into cooking. So if she wants to embark on a canning project, we have a blueberry patch. We go pick the berries. It's, you know, it's probably about 10 hours of work to get a jar of jam. So I will do that with her if she wants to do it as an activity. I'm not going to do it to save money. It does not save money. One of the interesting analyses that I did after we moved here is that it was more expensive for us to live here than it was to live in the city.
Yeah.
So we lived in New York City, Washington, D.C., and Boston. I thought, these are the most expensive cities ever. We must flee to the rural life. It's so much more expensive. And I've got some articles that detail that analysis that I did. But it's there are kind of all these misconceptions about the frugality of living rurally that are essentially not true. So that's kind of an interesting aspect of our lives. And in terms of, you know, kids costing more as they get older, they absolutely do. And I think it's one of the things that I really focused on was how easy it is to have cheap babies. So yeah. I wrote a lot on the blog on Frugal Woods about how easy it is to get free baby gear, how easy it is to have totally hand-me-down clothes. You know, we didn't buy anything for them as babies other than diapers.
No, I always did. Yeah, no, I always joked with people, you need boobs and diapers and you're fine.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Or, you know, if you're not breastfeeding, formula. Like I did a whole series from readers on where to get like quality cheap formula. So there are so many ways to make that phase of life cheap. And then as we get older with them, it still continues to be pretty inexpensive. A lot of the same tricks that I adhered to still work. Mm-hmm. So focus on depreciation when you're shopping used, right? So look for the items that are going to depreciate at the most rapid rate, right? So snow pants, which we need a lot of. Brand new snow pants can be over $100 for a kid. At a garage sale, they're $5.
Sure.
Get the $5 snow pants, right? Stretch pants, which are the only thing my kids will wear, At the thrift store, they are $3.99. At Walmart, they are $4.99. So have an awareness of where it makes sense to buy used and where it just makes sense to just get a cheap new option. And you know, we also do let our kids do the sports that they want to do. So right now that's running, swimming, and skiing. You can tell which one is most expensive. Skiing is like
That's okay. We did
egregiously.
competitive gymnastics, so I'm A-okay with giving kids life lessons.
Absolutely. And it really goes back to spending on your priorities. It's sitting down and thinking about, okay, what kind of life do I want to have? What are the important things that are included in that life? Is it getting takeout every week? Is it having cable? Is it buying new clothes? Or is it doing skiing and family vacations and being able to buy your kids the giant stuffed dog that my 8-year-old wanted for Christmas? This thing is like the size of a real dog, right? So it's really understanding how you want to use your resources.
So it's interesting because my kids are older now, so they've got like mad money, and my 14-year-old walks downtown. So we live in a walkable neighborhood, and we chose this because we could walk to all of the places. And when I was home with the kids, it was often that I didn't need to drive, so the van just stayed in the driveway for a long time, because all the schools, all the shopping is in within walkable. So I will give her money to go downtown, and her friends will go into Jamba Juice. And then she looks at the prices and she's like, we own a blender and there's always frozen fruit. So she then pockets that money and doesn't buy the Jamba Juice and watches her friends drink it. And then she's all excited because she quote unquote saved $8. And that's fine. That's how they gain their money is by not spending it when they go out with their friends. So no,
Absolutely. And you can start that lesson young. I would say that it's about at age 6 that my kids really started to, or the older one has really started to understand the way in which the economy works. So it's, you got to remember, like, kids, they don't know this stuff. So I'm like, mama works. I work. So I do financial consultations with clients. I get paid money. We take that money. And we buy things we need at the grocery store. And that is a revelation for little kids because they don't have a concept of how all of this transpires. And so you can, if you have little ones, you can start by with just concepts that simple. There's a fear that talking about money will cause kids to feel financial insecurity or be greedy or to feel as though it's an inappropriate conversation. It's not. You make it age appropriate and you make it related to what they understand. And then when you're in the grocery store, have them read the prices to you so they start to understand how money works and have them understand how much it costs to buy groceries for a week. And this really enables them to calibrate like your daughter does to this idea that an $8 juice is ridiculous when the frozen fruit is so much cheaper. So you can start these lessons really early. You can give them their own money. Just a little bit of money to work with, to just build up their financial literacy early on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So my oldest is 22 and she's in law school, and she's but my kids are naturally pretty frugal just from watching us. But my middle daughter is 19 and she's pretty uber frugal. I would classify her as that. So we transfer a certain amount of money, and she's not in a dorm anymore. She's in an apartment with some friends, and she has celiac disease, so she needs to eat a certain way. And in general, gluten-free food, well, packaged gluten-free food is more expensive than shopping the aisles of the food that's naturally gluten-free. And she gets a certain amount of money from us every week, no matter what. And we're watching and like, what's going on here? You're not spending the money. So then my husband's idea is, well, she doesn't need this much. Don't give it to her. I'm like, no. She's decided to save this because she essentially eats the same thing every day. She's in this chicken and broccoli kick, and she's now learned that she can buy the big bag of frozen chicken and saute it and save this. I'm like, don't punish her for being frugal in this way. So anyway, that's a gold star. When it comes right down to it, we all just want to climb into bed each night feeling calm, content, and at peace. We want to know that we were able to keep all the balls in the air and were productive without neglecting our own needs and wants. I know. I get it. That is why I recorded a free masterclass on the 10 things happy, successful people do each and every day, and I'd love for you to join us. Learn simple and practical tips to reclaim the sanity and joy in your home and family at stephanieoday.com/masterclass. I don't say my kids' names out loud either on the podcast or on the internet. And I've noticed that you're the same way. And then I also noticed, and correct me if I'm wrong, did you start the website and you weren't going to share your personal name and it didn't come out until the book deal? Is that how that worked?
Yes. So Frugal Woods, which is the blog, started back in 2014, which feels like an extremely long time ago now. And yeah. It was essentially a personal diary of this financial independence journey that my husband and I were going on. And then people started reading it, and a lot of people started reading it. And I was like, okay, this has legs. And so I started writing more about managing money in general. And I started a reader case study series that is real people sending in their real money, and I give them real advice. And I really became passionate about financial education and financial literacy. And so I'm much less interested in like writing about myself at this stage and yeah. much more interested in working with people on their money. So a year and a half ago, I launched a financial consulting business.
Oh, good
and
for you.
So yeah, what I do is work one-on-one with people, and we go through everything in their life that has a dollar sign, and I create a comprehensive financial plan for them. We figure out the answers to their questions. We alleviate their fears around money. And a big piece of it is financial education, is helping people understand, what does your 401k mean? Should you get a 529 for your kids? If you have no idea what these acronyms are, that's totally fine. We'll start at the very beginning. And I find that just so richly rewarding and fulfilling. So yes, to answer your question, initially Frugal Woods was kind of the moniker. It was just going to be this anonymous blog. Then I did get a book deal, and they were like, well, you have to publish with your real name. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So
I had the exact same issues. I literally just wanted to be the Crockpot Lady. So I get that. But then also, Crockpot is a registered trademark of Jarden Corporations, and there was no way I was going to hire a team of lawyers to do any of these things. So yeah. And embrace who you are. And then did you write a proposal, or did publishers reach out to you? And this is just me being a writing geek, and I like to know all these things. Also, you can say, hey, Steph, this is too personal. I'm okay with that
too. Oh, no, I'm happy to talk about the book journey. Is an interesting one for anyone who wants to write a book. And there are so many different ways to go about it. So HarperCollins reached out to me. One of their editors was a reader of the blog and said, have you ever thought of writing a book? And it was like, pretty much only since I was born. So great. And she said, you need an agent. I was like, What is that? So she introduced me to a couple agents. One of them had actually proactively reached out to me like a year prior and said, do you want to write a book? And I was like, I don't know. So I hooked up with this agent, and then she helped me to put together a proposal. And the way that it works is that it was actually shopped around, but I believe that I can't remember the legal terminology, but HarperCollins essentially had rights of first refusal because they had really prospected for the book. And so we did end up with HarperCollins. I loved my editor there. I really appreciated the team there. And what I will say about writing a book is that it's very different from any other type of writing, particularly if you're working with a mainline publisher. They need something they can sell. That's the bottom line. And so it is not the same as self-publishing or writing a blog or doing creative writing, all of which I had done previously, because a publisher is in it. You know, they want quality literature and quality nonfiction. they also have to make money on your book. So there will be a certain way that they want you to write. So I kind of always like caution people who want to write a book. I'm like, it's a little different than just like, you can't write whatever you want.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that your relationship with your agent is for life. At least that's how I feel. I love my agent. I still talk to her.
Good.
And so if you do have an agent, they are worth their weight in gold.
That is wonderful. And if you're listening to this and you're new to the podcast, episode 109, I share my publishing stories. I've had a little bit of a different situation with my agent. So I'm glad. I'm glad that yours is answering your emails, Liz. That's fantastic. All right. So what comes next then for you? So your kids are still kind of little, and I like that you are doing your financial consulting, and we're going to drop links. So if you want to work with Liz, we will put links in the show notes and make sure that it's all linked up. But do you feel like there's more books in you?
My agent feels that there are. Apropos of the previous conversation, I've started another book. We'll see. Again, writing a book is, it's kind of like having a baby, but it's harder. Interestingly, my second daughter was born about 2 weeks before the book came out. And I have to say her birth was easier. She just kind of popped right out. The book, for me, it's just, it's challenging. It's very hard work. I wanted something that I felt very proud of. It's also challenging because the book exists eternally as a time capsule. So it is a snapshot in history. I have changed radically since I wrote the book. I think having two kids will do that to you.
Yes.
The stuff you're like, oh, all of these things I hold true. And then the kids get older and you're like, never mind, we're watching TV.
Yeah.
Or whatever it might be.
So how do you marry that with like kind of like your quote unquote online persona and then Liz, the actual full-fledged human? Because I have found that too. People are like, well, do you still use your Crock-Pot every day? I'm like, nope. And they're like, well, did you save money using your Crock-Pot? I'm like, nope. Because when you have to cook every day, it costs a lot more money. And in general, the reason I liked my Crock-Pot is I could cook once or twice a week. But when you're feeding this kind of like internet beast, sometimes it feels a little performative. So how do you kind of qualify that in your brain?
I think for me, the blog has always been sort of the ongoing timeline of my life. So it's like things would sort of shift. And I have even said in blog posts, remember how I said this in the book? Totally changed my mind. So I was completely wrong. So I'm very transparent about all the times I've changed my mind, because I think if you don't grow and evolve as a person, like, what are you doing? Right. So I'm very fine with contradicting myself. And again, at this point, I have written, there's close to 800 articles on Frugal Woods plus the book. I don't have a lot more to say.
And I'm going to insert here, in case you haven't read Liz's writing, she is a gifted writer. And these are meaty, meaty posts. There's a lot embedded into there. So if you have 800 articles and posts, I would imagine it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of words. That's a lot.
And I kind of feel like at this point, I've sort of said everything I want to say about myself. And I'm sure that things will come up. We will change. We will evolve. I will sort of have new revelations, but I don't have really as much to say about it. I'm kind of like, well, I'm just sort of doing my thing over here. And so I've really shifted my focus to working one-on-one with clients, which I find to be so rewarding and fulfilling. It's also very, very hard to give financial advice and have it apply to every single person reading, right? Because there's so many nuances and specificities to each person's financial situation. So I think it's a real gift that I get to sit down and say, okay, so-and-so, in your exact situation, in your tax bracket, in the state you live in, with the number of kids you have, with the age that you are, with the goals that you have, you know, here I can really give you a fully fledged plan that's actually applicable to you. So for me, I like that, because I hate giving advice and saying, oh, this applies to everyone, one size fits all. And it's like,
no,
probably not really one size fits all.
Yeah, no, it's not that. I detest one size fits all. And I think one of the reasons I started writing and I was so interested in personal development is in my early 20s, I spent a lot of time reading quote unquote how to books, but they were mostly written for white businessmen in sales, and they were not applicable, whatever that word is, to me as a young wife and mother. And it literally drove me nuts. And the way that I teach is research and, mm-hmm. and do the things, and then filter through your own life, your own experiences, your own ethics and morals, your religious backgrounds, and what you're trying to do. So I completely and totally concur with you there. And what's interesting is what popped in my brain when you were talking is, do you know Zach Bissonette? He wrote Debt Free You. And he's a cool guy. He also ended up writing a whole bunch about the Beanie Baby phenomenon. And I think he produced a Netflix documentary on Beanie Babies. But he wrote Debt Free You. So how to get through college without going into debt. And then he also wrote how to be richer, smarter, and better looking than your parents. And so I bought numerous copies of that book and sort of left it around the house. And hopefully through osmosis, my children pick it up. They're really tired of me trying to embed life advice and life lessons onto them. Almost yearly, I was giving them blank journals. And I'm like, so when I give you a little nugget of wisdom, you should write it down. And they're like, no. Yeah, they don't want that.
No, even my 8-year-old would like not do that. I'll tell her something and she's like, I am aware. I'm like, okay, well, that's
good. Oh, I love it. Oh, I love good the snark. I love it. I am aware. Man. Oh, that is so funny.
I am aware. I'm like, well, your actions would belie that. But yeah, it's, our kids, you know, if only they would just listen to us.
They will. So they will. It just kind of permeates eventually. And it's really fun for me to now see my kids parrot back things that my husband and I have said over the years. I'm like, oh, okay. And little things like when we're in the grocery store and I ask them to reach for a jar of pasta sauce. And yes, I know how to make pasta sauce, but I actually really like the jars and it's fine.
I buy jarred sauce too. See, here's the thing. I've made sauce from scratch from tomato plants that I started from seed myself. I also buy the jar of sauce.
Yes. Yeah. And it tastes better. And so it's fine. But so it's fun for me to say, oh, go get some pasta sauce. And they stand there and they're looking at the prices and then they reach towards the one that's 45 cents less. And in the big, huge, massive scheme of things, 45 cents doesn't matter. But I love that they are deciding on purpose to reach towards that.
Yes, you've instilled amazing lessons. And like I said, start young. Like I do hear a lot from clients and readers. They're like, well, I think I'll wait until my kid is 15. I'm like, no, you can start when they're five. Like I will tell you, you know, I started, of course, because I'm nutso. So I started when they were like 1 and 3 with money. They didn't get it. But I, you know, once they can recognize numbers. So really my youngest is kindergarten and we're getting there with the numbers. Bring them into this conversation, bring them into the discussion about how much things cost, because then they'll be like Steph's kids. They'll be comparing prices. And that kind of awareness will bleed over into every other aspect of their financial life.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Again, we live in Silicon Valley. So we're insanely privileged and live in what to some would be a ridiculously overpriced area, except for we made it work and we refinanced and actually our mortgage is fantastic and we're meeting all of our goals and blah, 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 blah. So big, huge honking disclaimer there. But what's fun is we were watching reruns of The Cosby Show. And I know Bill Cosby's a predator and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, the show is fun to watch. And at one point, Theo, I think, walked in and we're asking his parents, and one's a doctor and one's a lawyer, and said, are we rich? And Cliff goes, no, your mom and I are. You're poor. You have nothing. And that just sort of was.
That's perfect.
It was just so funny. Oh, all right. So before we sign off for today, is there any like nuggets if someone is just starting out and they're just starting to realize that they don't have to run on this like hedonistic hamster wheel of buy more, all the time, and they want to sort of embark on a FI or financial independence, retire early, or fiber financial independence before retiring early, kind of life trajectory, where would you direct them?
I think the first thing to do is establish your goals. I really think that the money will follow. Figure out what you want to do. I think it's very important if you're going to retire early, you need to retire to something, not just away from the job that you have that feels unfulfilling. You need to give yourself a destination. So figure out what that is, and then you can really create a financial plan that's going to enable that and that will allow you to pursue whatever you want to. If you're just getting started with managing your money, I have a free month-long course called the Uber Frugal Month. You can take it anytime. It's free all the time. It's an email a day for 31 days, and it guides you through the process that I followed to really understand my money. Like, I mean, I knew nothing when we started. So to understand my money, to figure out what to do with it, to create plans around it, and to feel confident that you can sort of set financial goals and achieve them. So those are the two things I would say. Start with the non-money goals and then take the free Uber Frugal Month challenge to figure out where you're at with your money, right? How much do you know? How much do you need to save? What are the areas that you need to work on?
Okay, we'll be certain to link that in the show notes. And then I want to plug your book, because one, it'll keep HarperCollins happy. And two, it'll help maybe egg you on to continue writing, because you are a fantastic writer. You really are.
And
from my own standpoint, only because I used to have a 5-year-old and 8-year-old little baby girl, and before bed, I would read them chapters from Little House on the Prairie. And I did have this kind of fantasy just of selling it all and going to live on a farm. It would be fun, maybe perhaps, to write a modern Little House on the Prairie series of books for little baby girls with some spunk. So your book is Meet the Frugal Woods, Achieving Financial Independence Through Simple Living. And Liz, I think you are so much fun. I would love to keep in touch with you and see where you are in the next 3, 5, 7 years.
Oh, likewise. Yeah. And here. Did you say that you had questions from some of my readers?
Oh, that's a
that
great.
They wanted,
you know,
answers?
What? It's funny. We sort of organically went through them, but you're absolutely right. So Liz, if you sign up for her Frugal Month Challenge, she immediately provides a link to her Facebook group where you can ask questions and write questions and meet other like-minded people. And I decided, well, I'm in the group. I'm going to ask her readers if they had any burning questions for Liz. And so we did touch upon them. One of them was immediately the idea that you no longer, once you hit that number, need to be uber frugal, and you can decide to ski, and there's no shame in that game. And so we already discussed that. And then also one of your readers wanted to know kind of what your typical daily routine was like.
Oh, sure. So that's another thing that has changed over the years, because it changes with your kids. So I work while the kids are in school, which is about 7:45 a.m. to 3:15 p.m., Monday through Thursday. I do not work early in the mornings. I do not work at night. I do not work on the weekends. I do not work on Fridays. So Friday is a day that I spend with my husband. That's our date day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we go to the grocery store. Sometimes mm-hmm. we go out to lunch. Sometimes we just hang out together at home. And having those very clearly defined work hours really lets me prioritize being with the kids when they're home, focusing on, you know, doing other stuff other than working. So skiing, spending time with my friends, gardening, being mm-hmm. in a book club, doing yoga, exercising when I'm outside of those hours. So I like having these like clearly defined school hour, work hours. And if it doesn't get done during that time, it goes on to next week, or it must not have been that important, because I have, you know, I spent years really prioritizing my work. And when I started Frugal Woods, I would get up at like I don't know, 5 or 6 a.m. in order to write in the mornings. And then I would write at night after work. Mm-hmm. And I'm no longer in a place where I need or want to do that. So that's kind of my typical day.
I'm similar. One thing I noticed on your site is you don't have ads. So you do recommend products, and I know you're getting affiliate income from that way. But it was interesting because I would imagine it's a highly trafficked website. What made you decide not to put ads on?
I am philosophically opposed to them. Mm. I don't like them. And so I try not to do anything on Frugalwoods that annoys me on other people's websites. Mm-hmm. And I just don't, it really goes against kind of the ethos of what I'm promoting, this mindless consumerism or this response to targeted advertisements. So I don't do ads. I am happy to recommend products that I use and that really mm-hmm. work for me. But I operate in a very similar way with my consultations. It's a flat fee. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole, with like financial advising, there are often so many hidden fees, upselling, ongoing percentages that you're paying. Mm-hmm. I don't do any of that. It's like, here's what you pay, here's what you get. So ads are, I'm sort of like allergic to advertisements. And so that's why there aren't any. I just don't like them.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. I can see that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I did go through the questions that your readers had and the questions that I had. Is there any closing remarks you want to make?
I don't think so. Just thank you for having me. It's fun to reflect on all this.
Oh, good. All right. Well, thank you, Slow Down Society, for spending so much time with us. We will be back next week with another episode. You take care. Consider yourself loved and hugged. I think you're absolutely wonderful. Do you have a slow living story to share? Leave me a voicemail at stephanieoday.com/podcast with any questions, comments, feedback, or testimonials, and I will be sure to include it in an upcoming episode. Also, if you found value in this episode, please share it with your family and friends and subscribe through your favorite podcast provider. The more you share, comment, and leave positive reviews, the more people we can reach and share the slow living lifestyle and messaging. Thank you, Slow Down Society, and have an absolutely wonderful day.